Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless.
I did enjoy the pizza. I really appreciate you picking that up. It makes...
Don't let me leave before I give you cash.
You can leave before I give you cash. Because I am cheap. I just wanted you to know how cheap I was.
I'm cheap enough that I don't even care.
But I actually had to make sure we had cash on hand because I don't know what cash looks like anymore.
And if you didn't, I know where you live.
You do.
We see each other enough that I had to look back through texting stuff to find your address because I was like, how do I get there again?
Well, worst case scenario. That was intense.
Man.
Tonight is bad. Basement or something like that.
Worst case scenario, I just get your ticket on Saturday or something?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I really do. I love that.
We're good. I'll let you know when we're going to do it.
Yeah.
All right. So we're good?
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good.
All right. Let's do it. I'm guessing you already started recording.
I did.
That's awesome.
You got to have that background.
Well, welcome to Real World Theology, episode 6. Wow. I am your host, Fizz. This week on the show, we're going to try to undertake an extraordinary endeavor. Typically, we cover one movie at a time, looking at the specific narratives and themes offered by that particular film. Well, on this episode, we're not only going to try to hit on two separate movies, The Wolverine and Pacific Rim, but we'll also try to tackle the question that is, to a certain degree, underlining most of what we do here at Real World Theology. That question is, why do people go to the movies? More specifically, why do people flock to summer movies? I'm sure we're going to be all over the place, but here to help me this episode are the Power Team.
Power Team.
Writer, wow. Blogger, and comic guru, Griffin Kale.
What's up?
And writer, podcaster, and amateur filmmaker, Mark Wingerter.
What's up?
So is everything going well, gentlemen? Are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
I'm very excited.
Okay.
It's crazy. You're 6 episodes in. I've been a part of 3 of them, which is pretty exciting. I'm like, yeah, this is awesome.
I got to catch up to you.
Yeah. Are you only at 2?
I'm only at 2.
Whoa. I've jumped ship, huh?
I didn't mean to make it a competition. And to be fair, Mark is, I think he's scheduled for the next one, too.
I am.
What are you doing? You can't say really.
Yeah, well, I don't want to say yet.
I understand.
But know that... but know that Mark is on it. So, I mean, the thing is, and one of the 3 reasons I like you guys as the Power Team is because there are certain guests on shows that you can almost always rely on. You can almost always count that they're going to be there holding the line. And you're 2 of my guys. And so I really appreciate you guys being here.
Thanks, Fizz.
Because we're suckers for that's really what it is.
I like you spelling it out because I don't have to say it. You know, no, I just love you guys. You guys bring so much to the show, so much energy, so much life.
Yes.
And I'm lying. But we have a lot to cover. So let's dive right into The Wolverine. The Wolverine throws us into a darker comic tale that lends itself to the struggles of a character who has to deal with his own version of immortality and the meaninglessness or meaning he finds in that life. So
very succinct.
Did
you write that yourself?
It's almost like I wrote that out.
Before you said it.
Before I said it. So so what did you guys think? The Wolverine.
You're the comic book guy. You go first.
Oh, let me have at it. All right. Well, I think overall, I liked the movie more than I liked Iron Man 3 and more than I liked Superman. Now, I will say that, but here's where I also want to back off a little bit. Both of those movies were absolutely not even B movies. They were like D movies this summer. And that's my honest opinion. So it really isn't a huge step up. But I at least would have said like a B-, C-plus area for Wolverine if I had to give it a grade. And I know that is the grading scale upon which Real World Theology bases its life upon. I'm just kidding.
Not
at all. But yeah, I thought it was really good. And I felt like they preached to the comic book fans. They gave things to them that they were looking for, especially the storyline where I feel like most of the public doesn't realize that Wolverine is a murderer. And that's his MO, and he kills people. Like, he is an final justice, whereas a lot of comic book heroes are not. And so I like that they kind of touched on that, that he's like, I'm done doing this. I'm done killing people.
Like the Punisher.
Like the Punisher.
Yeah.
But not nearly as bad as the Punisher, because the Punisher, like, he'll shoot you in the face, yeah, and then you'll be on the ground and he'll shoot you in the face some more. Like, he does not even care. but, like, Wolverine kind of feels bad about it from time to time. And so they kind of hit on that. But then, as Fizz showed me earlier on this week, they immediately, like, he jumps in and just starts killing people again. So, and so I think with that, I kind of felt like they preached and gave a little bit of homage to just the everyday moviegoer fans who wanted to see action, wanted to see the claws out, slicing through some people, destroying some people, you know, making sure that that was what people left the theater feeling like, that was a good Wolverine movie. So as compared to the previous Wolverine movie, way better.
Oh, way better.
100
yeah.
times better.
Way
like,
better.
Fantastic. But as compared to summer movies go, as compared to the Pacific Rim we're going to talk about later, not that good.
Well, I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. I might be a little bit biased because I'm a big Wolverine fan. But you know, I don't think
of the masses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been a Wolverine fan since I was a little kid. So I mean, I've always, he's one of the superheroes I stuck to, and I really thought, you know, as much as this was advertised to be the Wolverine film we've all been waiting for, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what that film was supposed to be, the Wolverine film we've all been waiting for, what everybody's waiting for. But I thought they did a great job with the character again. I saw one article you had linked to us that said, basically called this Wolverine 5, because all the other X-Men's were basically...
Really about Wolverine.
Really about Wolverine, and really Wolverine heavy. But as far as it being a one-off story... introducing some different settings and some different X-Men characters, I really liked it, and I think a lot of people left with a little bit of a down feeling about the movie, because at the end it kind of got cartoonish. It was kind of a cartoonish ending. It was a little over the top maybe for some people.
Well, and full disclosure, I mean, we are, if people haven't seen these movies yet, we do this podcast far enough out you are welcome to spoiler the crap out of anything you'd like to. Right. So if you're listening and you haven't seen these movies and you don't want to know what happens, we're probably going to mention things, because it's the end of the movies, the middle of the movies, and the beginning all have to do with the themes and narratives we're going to talk about. So
Wolverine dies in the end. Yeah. Not quite,
but close.
But I really liked it. I liked it as a character story. I liked it as a movie as a whole. And I'll say a little bit more about that and like how it compares to other summer movies and stuff a little bit later in the podcast. Because I do have some thoughts about that. But, you know, as far as... I didn't understand why people didn't like it. I mean, I could kind of see their side of things, but I really loved it. And I really loved Iron Man 3. I mean, I really loved Iron Man 3. I thought it was a great movie, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, and so I think with this movie...
Not to get off on Iron Man 3.
Not to get off on Iron Man 3. I'm not even gonna follow that rabbit trail right now.
I will. I didn't like Iron Man 3 that much either.
It was good. And sorry, I apologize. Iron Man 3 is above Man of Steel, because Man of Steel was garbage.
Man of Steel was bad.
Like a small child in the future will not like that movie. But I will say it was not as good as Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 1 in my personal opinion. But here's my thing with Wolverine, and here's my beef with Wolverine. And it's my beef with any movie that does this. If you leave holes in your like understanding of a character, especially a character that is built and has been created as long as Wolverine has, I think when you like gaps in the movie, they just get me, and I can't get past them. I can't forget them. Like holes in the plot and holes in the story, they irk me. And so the cartoonish ending that you're talking about, specifically the whole thing with like cutting off of the claws, and then like there's still metal there, right? Like, cause he just cut the end of the claws off. There's still claw back there, and like all of a sudden the bone grows out, and it's just like, really, like that's what needs to happen right now. And then, like, that's terrible. Well, but
does that make it a bad movie overall?
And then
no,
it doesn't make it a bad movie overall. But I can't, like, those are little things that I can't get past. And I think just how over the top the ending was. It was a character piece right up until like the last 20 to 30 minutes, and then it became like a typical, like, one guy's in there and he's fighting, and I gotta get there to help him fight. And then, like, there's like all fighting's going on. There are like three fights going on. Everybody's fighting their own villain. Everybody's got their own guy that they're facing off with. And then, like, of course, the good guys have to win, because God forbid the good guys not win at the end. And then the best part ever, which I was actually excited about this, like, it was like terrible, terrible, terrible. And then the reprieve was after the credits.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
After the credits, man, I am looking forward to the next X-Men movie a lot. Because X-Men 1 was great. X2 was great. Like, done well.
Bryan Singer's back in the director's chair.
In the director's chair, and he's like, gonna be great. I am sick and tired of First Class being the thing that people remember.
Listen, when Picard rolled out in that wheelchair coming around the bend, I was like freaking out.
I was like, all right, this is like, if anything, it's a good movie because of that. And I'm pretty sure Bryan Singer directed that part.
he probably had his hands like all over it. He's gonna prep for the next movie. And I feel like where I landed on the Wolverine really echoes a lot of what you two are saying. I felt like I'm probably a little more in line with Griffin. Like, I really enjoyed the fact that we finally dug into the character of Wolverine, and we were really digging into what makes him the character that people want to go see, that compels them to go to the theater just to see a movie about this one X-Man. And I didn't like it as much as other movies I saw this summer. But at the same time, I as far as comic book movies go, I thought it beat out Superman and Iron Man 3. But then again, like I said, I have a slightly lower opinion of Iron Man 3. But what I wanted to hit on, and this is something that I actually didn't plan on talking about, but basically talking about how popular it is, what is it about Wolverine that you think can carry an entire movie? Like, obviously, he does something to audiences. Like, he is... I mean, there's a reason that he is the most popular X-Men. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason that he could be set, you know, that X-Men 1, 2, and 3 could have been Wolverine 1, 2, and 3. Yeah. And then, you know, then he got his own movie again. What is it about Wolverine's character that compels audiences?
Let me take a stab at it because I think I might give you something to lead in with, Griffin. I think in terms of my knowledge of the X-Men, he's kind of like the total package of what you want from a superhero, because he's a lot of things in one. You know, I think people are drawn to his snark, you know, his humor, and I think people are really drawn to his rage and his, you know, kind of berserker type mentality.
Is this Warcraft terminology you're using?
Berserker? Yeah, you know, that berserker rage, whatever you call it. No, not Warcraft at all. That's not my expertise at all. I don't even get the joke, I'll be honest with you. But you know, you have like other X-Men like Jean Grey, who's kind of very dark and emotional and very has a lot of struggles with her, you know, controlling her powers. You have Xavier, who's very brainy and kind of mysterious. You have Cyclops, who is, well, in the comics he's a lot better than he is in the movies. You know, he's much more macho and manly, but he's kind of more of the Superman type character in the comics versus in the movies. He's very whiny. So Wolverine kind of hits on a lot of levels, I think, and compared to other X-Men, I think he resonates more as, like, you know, he's going to make mistakes, so he's a little more human. He's going to let his anger get the best of him. And then he has claws coming out of his hands. I mean, that's snick, just snick, cool. Snick, snick. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's one of those characters who makes enough mistakes that you, in the same way that people love Iron Man, like, he's a drunk who has daddy issues.
Yeah.
And he also, you know, sleeps around a lot. And, you know, people, but he also is like a superhero. And so people love that. There's this great story there that's like redemption and very much like this character who you want to succeed because he is so not. He's not successful. And he is successful, but not in traditional senses of like, what are you doing with your life?
There is a redemption story. There's a kind of a constant redemption story, which, yeah, I think is what most people go through. You know, yeah, you continue to make mistakes, and you continue to make the same mistakes, and yeah, Wolverine does that.
And also, Wolverine is kind of, like, in the comics, he plays like a lot of roles. And people joke around that he, like, there was a time whenever he was like Little John. He was in like every single book there was.
Yeah.
He's like showing up, and you're like, what is he doing over there? Why is he in a Batman book? Like, what is he doing in DC? Like, he was just everywhere. But the thing was, is that he's such a multifaceted character in that he can be your hitman type, your force kind of guy, like your Punisher. Like, I'll go kill somebody if I need to. But he's also your leader in the sense of he can lead teams because he does have like a snarky, sarcastic side, but also a really good, like, strong leadership side. But then he also has this caring, fatherly type that you see with him in like Kitty Pryde and him in a lot of like the younger X-Men, especially in the X-Men movies. You saw some of that.
You see that in X-Men.
Yeah. Was it Rogue that he's really close
Rogue
with?
Rogue and Iceman.
Yeah. So you see how he's got like this fatherly figure that Cyclops doesn't get, because as much he's pretty whiny in the comics right now too. So, he's a whiny character and can be. And so people don't really always like Cyclops because he doesn't, it doesn't seem like he has any powers other than like eye beams. Like, oh, really? That doesn't even do anything. Really? Eye beams just like, it knocks that guy over. It doesn't kill him. Like, why are we care about you and why are you important whenever this guy, Wolverine, is not only is he unable to die, but he also can't be hurt really. And he can't. And he has claws, which is awesome.
I think we're drawn to the immortality. I think that's cool.
The same reason we're drawn to vampires. Like, yeah. I think that's the same reason that you can put a vampire in a movie, and it's like, I'll go see that.
Well, I think the vampire thing is very apt because this movie, I mean, given it, it works on a lot of levels, but what they really put out in front is this concept of what is more valuable, a life that has an end or a life that goes on forever. And I think that's the struggle that we see in this movie.
I think if anything, that's the quote unquote, the Wolverine movie we've been waiting to see is like, you know, him actually struggle with something that's very Wolverine. You know, the X-Men Origins movie was like, I mean, on top of it being a complete mess and trying to throw in so many other things that were unnecessary, it really wasn't totally about Wolverine. It was just kind of like he was in the, you know, how he got to be where he got to be at the beginning of X-Men 1, basically. I mean, you know, it's just kind
of... That's the X-Men Origins movie had such an opportunity to play into some of that, like immortality stuff, because it's like, oh, he's dating this girl, he's married to this girl, kind of, I guess he's married, I don't remember if he was or not.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter. He's living with this girl, and like they had the opportunity to like fast forward you 50 years and she's like dying and he's sad about that, but they didn't take that opportunity. And I think this movie really took those opportunities of like, you can't tell me that you love always being alive and always having to see everyone else around you die. You can't tell me that that's something you enjoy, like everybody else around you except for the superheroes around you. That's really strange, right? I know, guys. Like, we should talk about that sometime. But yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to think about that the mortality of a character. How important is that to the character? And I definitely feel like Logan has dealt with that plenty of times in the comics. If you're looking for a really, you're like, hey, I really want to check out comics, because we talked about comic movies enough on here to kind of throw this out there. If you're looking for something Wolverine-esque and you're like, I want to get a really good Wolverine story and you want to talk about immortality, probably the best story is Old Man Logan, written by Jeff Loeb, and I believe, yes, no, but drawn by Steve McNiven, who's a fantastic artist. And so that's really all I care about, is Steve McNiven art. It's beautiful. So you should check that out. If you're looking for a really good story about the mortality of him, that's a great one.
I actually might do that.
Yeah, I would definitely suggest it. It's a really cool story. McNiven's art is beautiful to look at. But that's something I think that they didn't take this up. You couldn't do it in an X-Men movie because you have so many other stories going on, and they're really trying to focus on the team. But I think that this, if people have seen this and they go into the next X-Men movie, I think people are going to be really excited about what this is, because I feel like the Sentinels, which is the villain for the next movie, the Sentinels bring such a dynamic to the X-Men characters that they actually have the ability to kill X-Men, all of the X-Men, even Wolverine. They are created, they can be created to destroy specific characters. And I think that the idea of that is going to, people are really going to like that. I feel like the next X-Men movie is
going to be. So they're taking what they kind of tease the audience with in this one.
Yeah.
And hopefully they're going to build on it.
Well, and I think it one last kind of point about the whole Wolverine thing, why people like him. I mean, I wouldn't watch a movie about Cyclops. I mean, I wouldn't want to. You know, I wouldn't want to watch a movie about Jean Grey. I might want to watch one about Professor X, because it'd be Patrick Stewart, hopefully. But that's the only reason. I mean,
but even still, Professor X, we like Professor X because he's really good and he's really smart and he's always trying to do the right thing. Right. But it's really hard to relate to Professor X.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, it might even be more possible to relate to, like, Magneto. They were talking at one point about doing just a Magneto film.
Yeah.
Which would have been interesting.
They kind of did.
Yeah, they kind of rolled it into, I think, X-Men First
Class. You feel like they had planned for that. I mean, the parts that they put in there were great. Parts that they put in there of his story were awesome. I mean, German Magneto going down to South America and killing Nazis. Like, who doesn't love
killing Nazis?
Well,
sign me up.
But I mean, my point was going to be is that I think Wolverine has got a little bit of villain in him.
Yeah.
You know, he's a little bit of bad guy.
Yeah, he definitely is a little bit of bad guy. I think he's kind of like your, and people are going to be like, huh? Like, kind of like a Catwoman character. Like, he's can be good, can also do bad. And actually, the writer for that's Mark Millar, who's actually he's like the main writer, comic book writer that's behind the Fox Studios stuff. That he kind of deals with them. And he's recently this week, there was an article written that he kind of did an interview where he's trying to convince Fox to create a shared universe between Fantastic Four and the X-Men, because that's all that Fox has now, because Daredevil's back at Marvel now. And if you don't understand that, basically what the deal is that Marvel sold the movie rights to a couple of characters, and one, and some of those characters are the Fantastic Four and the X-Men are with Fox and not with Marvel Studios.
Everybody's trying to catch up to the Avengers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem.
They're trying to get everybody back with their own big movie.
And they really, Marvel would love for these companies to stop making movies so they can get the rights back. And they all they got to do is be working on a movie and they get the rights. They don't get the rights back. So that's kind of the crappy part, but it would be, wouldn't it be great to have all your characters back in
everybody
in
one
going from one character
the like biggest budget movie ever made.
Yeah, I mean it would be, I mean, but that's
like 5 minute vignettes for every character.
The Avengers book is for, I mean, if you read the comics, the Avengers book is right now is for that, because you have Richards of the Fantastic Four, you have you know, all these X-Men characters that are on the Avengers, you have all these like traditional Avengers characters like Captain America, Iron Man on the Avengers, you have these galactic characters like we're going to see in this upcoming summer's blockbuster Guardians of the Galaxy, a raccoon with a freaking gun, who's not going to want to go see that? so I think comic book movies really bring a couple things, which I think we'll talk about later and I really want to dig into later. They give us an opportunity to escape from reality because they are obviously very much not real. Like, there's no possibility that these things are ever going to happen. And that's such an escape. And they also give us the idea of really an immortality, not only because some of the characters are immortal, but because the stories have gone on for so long and will go on forever. And these stories that we're hearing about, Days of Future Past, this upcoming X-Men movie, that's a story that was written back in like the 70s. Mm-hmm. And that's a story that is stuck around.
It's
and that's
gonna be awesome. A cool story.
So I want to go back to something that both of you mentioned earlier. And you're talking about like Logan or Wolverine's kind of morality and how he's a bad guy to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And so we see, especially in this film, in the Wolverine film, him struggling with that. He's done things that he's not proud of. He decides to shed his old lifestyle. And to a certain degree, the old Japanese man wants him, or is trying to help him out, you know? Mm-hmm. So is there a justifiable reason for Logan to want to kill himself? I mean, like, is he trying to punish himself?
I don't think he's trying to punish himself. I think you kind of see in this movie that he's really struggling with the loss of Jean. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they could have done more to talk about that and deal with some of that. But he really is. He's struggling with the fact that he lost Jean and he killed Jean. Mm-hmm. He killed her. And that's probably something that weighs heavily on him because it is the love of his life. I mean, it is the person that he'd always hoped to be with, and he got her long enough to kill her and have to kill her. And I think that he wasn't really punishing himself, but I think he was like, I'm done living this life because my love, my only true love is gone too.
And yeah. Cause I mean, if you look at the morality side of it, he's not, really upset that he's killed a whole lot of henchmen. You know, he killed a whole lot of bad guys, but he's not really upset about that. Cause I mean, you know, even when he's brooding in the forest and, you know, kind of upset about his whole life, looking back on what he's done, he goes into the bar and beats those guys up. And he really doesn't want to. Yeah, well, he does, though. And I think I think that's a point that they make in the film. You know, a lot of him talking with his little sidekick that picks him up. I forget, you know, her name, but she was...
Mariko?
Mariko. Mariko. Yeah, Mariko, she was fantastic in the movie, by the way. And I really, really enjoyed her in that. But I think she kind of, you know, basically shows him that. And he gets a chance to kind of see when he goes to Japan and gets embroiled in this story that he still kind of is okay with being the hero because he doesn't really like the fact that he can't heal as fast, you know, now that something's happened to him and, you know, he's not healing as fast and not regenerating and not being able to just beat the crap out of everybody who comes at him, even if they shoot him and hit him over the head with a bat and all this stuff. I mean, he very much enjoys that. So, and I think that's plain to see. So I don't think he's beating himself up over what he has done, I think he's beating himself up over what he doesn't have. And I think that that's pretty clear that, like, you know, ultimately, if you're immortal, everybody you love and everybody you're around that you that isn't immortal is going to die and you're going to lose them. And I think he's at that point in this film, at least, where he's realizing that, and they get to, he gets to play with that, you know, kind of like, what if, what happens, what, you know, and they, you know, this guy gives him that chance. Yashida, is that his name? Yashida, he gives him that, right. Yeah, he gives him that chance to explore that and say, do you really want to just, because the whole thing that they kind of throw on him, and you realize that they're trying to guilt him into giving up his immortality at the end. But they throw on him that, you know, everybody that you're going to end up just hurting or killing or losing everybody around you. But it's more of like, he's just going to outlast everybody. And is that worth what good you're going to bring? I think is the ultimate theme.
Yeah. And I think the interesting part about the Wolverine's character is that he kind of deals with all of our insecurities, and they're true for him. Yeah. That everybody is going to eventually leave him. Mm-hmm. Everybody is going to eventually not be there for him. Everybody is eventually not going to be, you know, he's eventually going to lose everyone he loves. And so our insecurity of like worrying about like, is my wife happy with me, or is my girlfriend happy with me, or is my friend beside me happy with me, is my bandmate happy with me, are these things is everybody happy with me? For him, even if they are, they're gonna all eventually leave him.
It doesn't matter.
For somebody who's been alive for as long as he has at this point, you know, it's like he's probably seen a lot of people pass.
Right.
So,
well, I think one of the hardest things is to try to cope with windows that don't shine on eternity. So, like, when you have a very limited, like, when you think that nothing is there to go on, you know, you do not go on, you don't have anything else besides the physical, it's really easy to live for the physical. I mean, and even, you know, our villain of all people, I think, gives us one of the biggest nuggets of truth at the end when he says, you think life without end has no meaning. And I think that's kind of some of the things that we've been hitting on, you know, like if you can live forever, then it's not as, like, the things you do don't impact a lot. But then he goes on to say, but you're wrong, it's the only one that does. And I think it's interesting that he says that, because this almost reminds me of something that, you know, the whole Loki speech in the Avengers, where Loki's like really, really right about people being made to kneel down, but he's really, really wrong about them needing to kneel down to him.
Yeah.
And so I feel like if what this film is kind of saying is, it's kind of giving us this idea that if you live forever, you're important. But I think its motives behind living forever are still in the physical.
I don't think the Wolverine necessarily believes that if you live forever, you're important. I think that he understands that he is immortal and isn't necessarily going to live forever, but it's going to take a long, long time for somebody to figure out a way to kill him. Because, I mean, he could still technically die. But I think he's more of... He comes to the conclusion, maybe, in the end, that if he's going to be alive forever, he can do some good. And he understands how to do that good, even past his mistakes. Because I don't think he ultimately, in the end, learns how to not make mistakes. I think he ultimately, in the end, learns that he don't want to give it to Yashida, because Yashida is just going to, you know, give up, you know, just kill people and, you know, be bad, whatever. Can't think of a better term for that. But
walk around in his samurai
suit.
Well, Yashida wants it completely for selfish reasons.
Yeah.
And he realizes that he's going to use it for some good.
Well, yeah. if we think about what Mariko
Thank
says,
you,
and she says, nothing is without meaning, then it can kind of, we can kind of assume that hits Logan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Logan realizes that there's lots of people that could have his particular sets of powers, but in life, he's the one that has them.
Yeah.
So he's got to determine what he's going to do with them. And I think we kind of see him make that decision when she tells him that he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, he kind of doesn't care, because he realizes that he's got to do kind of what he's got to do. And if he's been put in a certain circumstance, I mean, this is where it's hard to knock out like two movies and a topic in one, in one thing, because we could easily go into, you know, does he care about predestination and like, is there destiny or not? But
yeah, because ultimately, I mean, as far as what we believe we live forever. We just live forever in eternity. You know, we have an eternal life.
Some part of us goes on.
Some part of us goes on. So, you know, we're not immortal in the terms of fleshly immortal, but we are immortal in the terms of our spirit. And so, you know, part of that, we're drawn to that, you know, immortality of like, well, what if we didn't have to think about dying and going to heaven or hell? You know, like, what if we just could be like Wolverine? And so I think that goes back to your, you know, why are we drawn to him and that kind of a movie and, you know, superheroes in general, because they have, you know, the ability to do things that we would love to explore as fallible, mortal humans. So,
well,
unless we have giant robots.
And also, we have giant robots. So, not that that's all that we could say about the Wolverine.
Right. I think we'll get into more.
But yeah,
once we hit the main theme, too.
Let's make sure we cover everything we need to. So, I want to transition to a movie that was one of my personal favorites this summer, in Pacific Rim. And Pacific Rim is an end-of-the-world robots versus monsters flick that, for some of us, takes us back to our childhood. And for others, introduces this world in a way that is probably more well done technically than any movie of its kind. Some say that it even sets the benchmark or the genre itself. So, what do you guys think? I mean, you both seen this movie? Yes. How did it hit you?
Well, I will say that it has been a long time since I walked out of the theater and said, I've got to see that again. And there's a lot of movies that I would surely watch again, and I end up just not paying the money to go back to the theater. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I've got to go see this again in the theater. And, you know, there's been a few, I think, people complaining about story and whatever. But this is all about spectacle. And it did a fantastic job. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think that as far as handling the giant things hitting other giant things in the face genre. We've only had a lot of like Michael Bay type stuff, and this was Guillermo del Toro outside of a little bit of his normal realm, his normal element, but very much putting his spin on it. And I thought, as far as directing, he did a fantastic job.
What would we say Guillermo del Toro's normal element is? Because this is my question, because I had a question with somebody the other day, like, what's your favorite Guillermo del Toro movie? And they're like, Hellboy? And I'm
like, Pan's Labyrinth?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's my thing is like easy, this guy's done. I know that's a good. I'm
Pacific Rim.
I'm saying that people, you know, what would you say? This guy has been associated with a lot of things.
I can define it.
But I feel like he's, so go for it, because I feel like he's been associated with so much, in the same way that you can talk about. Man, I'm terrible at this. Like Spielberg has been associated with so many things, but he doesn't have, I would say that he doesn't have a specific genre. So what would you say is like Guillermo del Toro, if he has a genre?
Guillermo del Toro, I think his genre is very clearly fantasy, but I think Guillermo del Toro, his element and his, you know, kind of genre, if you will, is being able to take the weird and the very creative and make them very personal. So I think he takes things that are eccentric and very fantastical and puts it down to a level of like very personal fairy tale, or, you know, very character, you know, because Hellboy could have been a very cartoonish comic book movie that he turned into, you know, a relationship driven, very personal, very like agonizing for the characters type of story. Same thing with Pan's Labyrinth. Pan's Labyrinth is a fantastic movie, one of the best fantasy movies I think that there is. And it's really all about just the wonder. He really takes the wonder and puts it down to what we really longed for and what we really wanted for as a kid. And so the reason why I think Pacific Rim is a little bit out of his element is because Pacific Rim is like taking what he's normally good at doing and blowing it up to extremes and kind of taking out that very close-knit, claustrophobic little journey pathway down this dark tunnel into the ground type of feel that his movies normally have. Even the Hellboy movies were very, you know, very big, and he did Blade 2. Blade 2 was great, and it was kind of just a very horror type element. He leans more to the horror fantasy, obviously. But that's how I would characterize it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it does. I just actually looked up, and he actually was he was part of the writer staff for the new Hobbit movies, which
he was actually going to direct the Hobbit movies. Yeah.
Yeah,
he was set up to direct it, but it took too long with the writers. I think it was the writer strike, and then I think whoever was financing it, I forget who it was, but they lost a lot of money and had to kind of rebuild, and so they were going to can the Hobbit at one point. And it got to the point where Guillermo del Toro had so many other projects he was interested in that he had to leave, and he left it to Peter Jackson. But all of the production design and a lot of the like monster designs and everything, the story, how it was kind of played out, how it eventually became three movies, that was all set up by Guillermo del Toro.
I mean, yeah, and I think the part of me, yeah, well, we won't get into that. Let's not even.
Anyway.
We'll wait till Christmas and we'll talk about the next one. How about that?
That's right. Del Toro has had a lot that he's been involved in.
Well, and so. I mean, and I think it shows. I mean, I was looking at his IMDb and there are like a ton of movies that he's associated with possibly doing in the future, which mm-hmm. I think is really exciting stuff. Because he definitely has shown himself. I hated the second Hellboy movie. It was like my least favorite thing in the world.
Worse than Man of Steel?
Okay, no, not worse than
exactly.
Man of Steel. Okay, back up.
Worse than Starship Troopers too?
Let me back up the hate. I'll back up the hate train a little bit. But no, I felt like this movie definitely for me was a childhood thing that I grew up loving Gundam, and I had these like these books where I would write down like all of like what I would have on my Gundam suit and what colors it would be. I drew everything. Sketched everything.
Quick explanation for people who don't know what Gundam is.
So Mobile Wing Gundam is basically like it's like a school basically. You know this in the same way that there's like a Air Force, but instead of having like pilots and flights, you know, and planes. They had these suits of armor that were like way bigger than they were, and they like flew around and had to fight each other and had to fight other planets and other people and things that were larger than them and aliens and all the good stuff. And all their suits were very different. All their suits had these very specific, you know, things that they had on them and different guns. And but it was a cartoon from like the 90s.
It was Japanese
anime started, but then they had an American series, and there are still Japanese series, I believe, that still go on.
But this movie was rooted out of things like that.
Yeah, it was definitely rooted in that. So. And if you grew up watching like Power Rangers and you loved it whenever, mm-hmm. you know, the whole suit got together, and if you grew up watching like all these shows where like eventually...
Like Voltron, maybe.
Voltron. Yeah. But I mean, like anything where people come together and make a suit, mm-hmm. that's what this is about.
Exo Squad, one of my personal favorites.
Oh, well, really?
That was what was so great about this movie was it has kind of become a rarity in Hollywood to where that, you know, these stars, no pun intended, align. And, you know, a lot of these great things, like, no way that would actually happen. What if this movie actually got made? And this is one of those movies for, I think, a lot of people who grew up in this genre and in this element really loving that. And really just makes for a fantastic movie for people who weren't involved in any of that growing up. But I think, you know, talking about Guillermo del Toro and how much he's been involved in, for him to actually settle down and do something is a really, really big deal. And for him to just kind of, he fell in love with this script, he fell in love with the story. It's an original script, which you don't see a lot in Hollywood. And he settled down and said, I'm going to direct this. I'm going to put everything aside, I'm going to direct this. It's a really big deal. And so he made it very much mm-hmm. more enjoyable, I think.
Well, I like what you said earlier because it echoes something that I've been saying when I've had to kind of review mm-hmm. Pacific Rim, mm-hmm. and it's very similar. I take the kind of caveat or the slight change that to me Guillermo del Toro, and I think it's never been more exemplified in any other of his other films like it has in Pacific Rim. But to me, his specialty is he takes something that if you were just to say it in a sentence, sounds very silly.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're watching it on screen, you're never really thinking about it looking silly or that it is silly. I mean, you may have qualms with some of the character development, or if you want to go after and have coffee and talk about the plausibility of aliens coming through, you know, a gash in the Pacific, you might be like, wait a minute. But while you're watching it, you're on the edge of your seat, completely enthralled in this fantastical narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I think... you could have given to Michael Bay, and he would have screwed up.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you could have given to tons. I mean, not just to pick on Michael Bay, but you could have given to tons of directors.
Let's pick on Michael Bay. That guy is terrible.
Listen, every time a robot, you know, Jaeger, as they called him in the film, punched a kaiju in the face. It was Guillermo del Toro punching Michael Bay in the face and saying, "This is how you make a movie."
Yeah. And
I came up with that quote. We'll say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Use it on another blog.
I did quote it somewhere else. I didn't quote you as saying it.
Yes, I'm sorry.
So
Michael Bay's terrible. We all agree.
That's just how much I hate Michael Bay. I just want to keep saying that.
So this is the anti-Michael Bay podcast?
It is.
Well, okay. So specifically.
Ooh.
All right. what are we seeing in Pacific Rim that is really drawing us to this movie?
I think it's a summer blockbuster, and it's probably the first in a long time that is an original script. When you talk mm-hmm. about last year's summer blockbuster, we're all going to agree it's Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an original story. I mean, it is an original story, but it's all
different interpretation.
Yeah, it's original. It's original interpretation. It's interpretation of characters who've been in existence.
These are all
new characters.
Yeah. It's Stacker Pentecost.
These are all original.
These are all new characters, all new ideas, and. And as much as, you know, okay, it's kind of derivative of all of these other things, it's not a derivative story. It's not a yes, you could say that there are parts that are like, come on, and we'll get to that later.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, because come on moments are waiting, don't worry. You know, obviously there are come on moments in any movie, but whenever you talk about this, it drew people in because it's like, oh, I'm not going to see something that I already have all these ideas of. If you miss something, like with Wolverine, if you miss an idea that is like based in comics, based in the truth and the history of that character in this movie, I wouldn't know it because I've never seen any of these characters before.
Yeah.
So you get mm-hmm. to fix that in the movie. And so I think that that's kind of a good thing because there's no distraction in it from, you don't get distracted by the history of it. But I think it also really attracts people because it's beautiful. It was a beautiful movie to watch. If you love art, it's a great movie to watch because you see how masterful these effects guys are, these artists, these people who are designing these characters, designing these ideas. They were really like, they were designing it with the thing in mind of like, this is going to be on a gigantic silver screen.
Mm-hmm. They really had a lot of passion for that, you know, hearkening back to the wonder that you had when you were a kid, you know, and I mean, the whole time they're just thinking about it. Oh my gosh, think about it. Monsters versus robots. We're actually getting to put this on screen, and that's why it was so much fun. Part of the fun for me was that you don't see this come out. I mean, you see a third sequel, a fourth sequel of the same movie. You mm-hmm. don't see original stories that are this exciting, this fun, this big of a spectacle. Because I mean, you know, it's not really what sells people. You know, studios want to kind of play it safe and go with, you know, the twos and the threes and the fours, and not really take a chance on something like this. You know, and I think that it shows because, you know, part of my larger point that I'm going to make is that, you know, Pacific Rim didn't do well in the box office. It did pretty well.
In the domestic box office.
In the domestic box office, yeah. But in the...
Really, in China, they love it.
Yeah. Imagine that. So, you know, I mean, because they grew up on this stuff. And I think not as many, you know, American domestic box office payers did. So, but this movie was just... I mean, for all of its... Yes, it had a very simplistic story. And I agree with that. And some of the acting was questionable.
Hold on. Idris Elba. He makes it all right.
That's why I said all right. Some of the acting.
His acting is so good.
It
swings the bar.
Absolutely makes this movie. I mean, that was absolute perfect casting. And I think a powerhouse performance like that one really made up for some of the wooden acting that we got.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with you on that. But that we'll get into that.
Stacker Pentecost, the character was, I mean... He is one of the greatest cinema characters of the last decade.
So we're gonna
so
say
much fun.
If we can green light a Pacific Rim 2, we're gonna have to call Joss Whedon and say, how are we bringing Stacker back?
That's
is
right.
That what we're doing?
Pretty much.
Okay. Well, okay. So we were doing some pre-show prep, and you know we looked at lots of articles. We looked at lots of kind of people's opinions about mm-hmm. all these movies. About what they had to say, why people went to watch them. And there was this one quote from an Elijah Davidson at the Real Spirituality website. And he says, Pacific Rim doesn't really ask any questions. It barely has characters. And while it is cinematically eloquent, that eloquence is mostly empty. There isn't really much of any of a discussion to be had with this movie. End of quote. And right away, like that, it kind of hit me really hard, and I couldn't disagree with it more. Now, I will submit that...
You said that a lot nicer than I was going to say it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, here's the concept. If he's correct about this movie, then the whole thesis behind what we do here is incorrect. Mm-hmm. That every movie has a narrative. Every movie is asking questions. Every movie has something that it's trying to say or rally us around. And I think it does this movie a disservice. Now, it is beautiful. Yeah. It was so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I think it was incredibly original, but I don't think only its originality is the only takeaway of this. I mean, we have to ask ourselves,
yeah.
I mean, are we alone in the universe?
Mm-hmm.
What would the human race do? I mean, like, this is like, this has every end of the world trope in it that you can think of. I mean, it has aliens. So there's other life. So from a spiritual perspective,
mm-hmm.
whoa, where'd this other life come from? Who mm-hmm. created this life? What is their mission? Are they our gods? You know, what do we do when we face things that we think are gods? In this movie, it even has a line where it talks about people start worshiping the kaiju.
Mm-hmm.
Because they assume they are God's wrath on the earth.
Yeah.
I mean, there is so... I mean, like I said, this isn't like watching the depths of metaphor that like Man of Steel tried to give us. You know? We're not here looking at very blatant Christ figures.
Like they're not slapping you in the face with it. And I think that that's where maybe... I don't want to, you know, drop on this guy. Because, sir, thank you so much for your opinions. But...
No matter how wrong they may be,
they will never listen to this podcast, so it probably doesn't matter.
They are so wrong. But I mean, I think it is a matter of like I apologize for them not slapping you in the face with metaphor the entire time.
Yeah.
But I think that that's where I think you'll find that on the whole, the people who actually saw this movie and probably gave it a chance, I would say, and saw if you set them down in two consecutive days, you set them down, you said, watch Pacific Rim, give it a chance, think on it all day. Then the next day you're like, watch Man of Steel, think on it all day, which movie was better. And I think because one doesn't sit there and smack you in the face with metaphor the entire time and smack you in the face with these huge like questions the entire time, maybe it's like, well, it doesn't really ask big questions. But at the same time, what it does is offer up ideas. It's like, okay, think about this. Like, I want you to actually think about the ideas that are presented here. And I think that you can see that with Pan's Labyrinth. You can see that with Hellboy. Guillermo del Toro is known for doing things like this, where he's like, here are some questions that I have about the world. Tell me what you think.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, that, and the reason why I say, you know, that guy, you agree with you that guy couldn't be more wrong, is that I think ultimately all disaster movies, because I think you could kind of put this a little bit into a disaster movie, you know, because you have this...
Because there was disaster.
Lots of things being disasterized.
Somehow not maybe as much as Man of Steel.
No. Somehow not.
Oh, gosh.
No, so you have catastrophic things happening because these things are coming out of the ocean. And I think all disaster films ultimately have a how is humanity going to fight back approach. You know, and that's how are we going to deal with this? And I think what the reason why I like Guillermo del Toro so much and what he does with this movie versus what Michael Bay can't do in some of the Roland Emmerich movies that are the later Roland Emmerich movies who directed Independence Day, if you don't know, and he's done like all the way up to like 2012, which is just an awful movie, but it doesn't do it as well now. And Michael Bay has never done it well, is that you really get to the heart of like the struggle of these characters. And, you know, you get a personal story in Idris Elba and the girl.
We're so bad at Japanese games for this podcast.
Mako.
Mako, yes. And so you get that personal story. You get the loss of a brother. You get and it's really the approach is taken to where that, yes, it's a very simplistic story, but I think there's a lot of, I guess, touch taken with that kind of approach, you know, and really kind of, instead of like, let's just see what happens when everything blows up, like, let's just see what happens when we really have to work together. Because, I mean, I think in this movie, you know, I think specifically this is much more about how the entire planet has to band together. And, you know, there's a little bit of a a hinting, I forget the exact dialogue, but at the beginning where he's explaining everything that has already happened. There's another cool thing about this movie. We end up, like, you know, middle of the way through this struggle against these beasts, instead of just, like, the new oncoming of it. But as he's explaining at the beginning, he's kind of saying we had to set aside our differences to save our planet. You know, we had to save our people. And so, you know, you see all these different cultures and races banding together to build these machines. And, you know, in the end, you know, you only have these four Jaegers left, but, you know, you've got, like, the Russians and the Chinese and, you know, these different cultures banding together. And even in the main two, you know, Marco and
Raleigh.
Yeah, Raleigh and whatever.
Other people.
So bad with the names. I'm so sorry. But, you know, you have... They're of different cultures. They're of different backgrounds. They're of different
even worlds. If they're incredibly stereotypical of those backgrounds.
They are, and I will agree with that. And that's, you know, that's a fault, I think, in the approach. But I think, you know, putting all that together and saying we've got to band together, they really did a good job of that. And so I think, you know, we're dealing with, it's a very humanistic idea of how we're going to save our butts from a seemingly unstoppable force. And so, you know, to say that there's nothing that to question from that is ridiculous, because there's tons to question about it. So,
well, I mean, if nothing else, and I'll say the last thing on this, because I'm the host.
You are.
If nothing else, I mean, it has to raise the question of what people think is humans' design on this planet. I mean, if you believe in more of an evolutionary survival of the fittest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if humans get wiped out, I guess that was just the next step.
Right.
You know, but if you believe we're here for a purpose, then you kind of have to deal with that. And I think that's the beauty of some of the things that, even though we're just like one-liners in the middle of the film to kind of world build a little, that's what they were still in there. Oh, and by the way, some people think these are God's judgment. But,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There's some people who were basically worshiping them. Mm-hmm. You know, there was the kaiju fandom, you know, with the tattoos and stuff. And I mean, it blew people's worldviews apart.
And even in the approach of, like, what to do about them, you have the guy who wants to study them and touch one and learn from one. And you have the guys who just want to just blow their heads off and beat them to death. And
how
I
do
think,
humans face destruction?
How do they deal with that? What's the best approach? Are these creatures, you know, do they have souls? I mean, how do we treat them? Do we try to, you know, incorporate them into our life? Do we just destroy them and eradicate them? And, you know, ultimately it comes down to, we have to destroy them, eradicate them, or they're going to do it to us. But, you know, all these different kind of... Del Toro's really good at little characters. And, you know, where you have Ron Perlman's character in the movie is just this eccentric, you know, black market kind of guy. He's really, really great. And just, you know, his approach and his philosophy about it, you know, interacting with all these different people, and everybody's got a different approach. And I think that they really take time, even though it's rush time and they only get like a one liner to explain it, because there's so much spectacle in the action. You know, I think they did a great job with that, but I think it forces you to question what you would do in that situation too.
Well, I think all that hopefully gives you an idea, even though we can't obviously stay on Pacific Rim for a really, really long time,
right.
That there was more there than just, you know, flash and bang. Even though the flash and bang was awesome.
Yeah. Really, really, really awesome.
But something that Griffin was talking about earlier, you know, like these are blockbusters. You know, these are some of the movies that actually did okay. Mm-hmm. Pacific Rim, especially once you tallied in the foreign totals,
international box,
you know,
which matters,
especially for a Guillermo del Toro film, since he has an international director.
He's from Spain,
So when you take that into account, you kind of have to say, all right, well, we've got something going on here that's hopefully more than just people butts in seats, minds turned off. So even in the intro to this podcast, we can see that people flock to their local movie theaters in droves. But obviously there's something about the culture or the type of movies we typically see during the summer that drives audiences to the theaters in record numbers. So what is the draw of the summer blockbuster?
Well, you couldn't have picked two better movies to put in the same podcast.
Oh, I know.
Well,
pat myself.
Bravo. because you have...
Go for that.
A struggle in Pacific Rim that is on the grandest scale that you could think of. And then you have a struggle on the Wolverine that's very personal. And I heard somebody point out basically that, you know, we have this summer in particular, we have all of these movies that are all about the end of the world. And the entire planet is collapsing and all these bad things are happening. It's just this, you know, monstrous ending where buildings are falling down and, you know, things are happening and you know, gigantic monsters are getting punched in the face. But then you have the Wolverine, who's just dealing with his own demons.
Who also and punches a monster in the face.
Well, he punches a monster in the face. But it's, you know, the biggest thing that happens in Wolverine is the Silver Samurai at the end, which is big, but it's very much more of a, you know, the action doesn't go into the sky. It doesn't, you know, whole cities are not falling down. It's just him versus another.
Yeah, it's in a private part of a country.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like the most people that it will kill will kill its own henchmen. Like,
yeah.
And so it really is. It's kind of like the first two Iron Man movies where and they kind of allude to it and talk about it in Avengers where they talk about you've only ever had to fight for yourself. You've only ever had to defend your own stake at this world. Mm-hmm. Like you've never really had to do anything that protects anyone else. And I think that that was this Wolverine movie where there's nothing in this movie that is really going to affect the world. Like if Wolverine dies in this movie and that's like the worst thing that happens, like it's like, all right.
Yeah.
And maybe Silver Samurai will go on to like hurt other people, but he's still only one man. I guess he can only kill so many people.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Unless he gets up very early.
unless he gets up very early. But, and Wolverine and that character can be killed by, you can drown them. You can drown him as a character. That is one way to kill the Wolverine that has been.
I did not know that.
Yes. Well,
cheerio. Now you do. Yeah.
Now you do. But that, so like, you know, it's like how it really is. It was a movie that was only dealt with the life and death situation of a character and their own demons. And I think what you were going to point towards was that Pacific Rim does the exact opposite of that.
It does.
Where it really deals with the demons of everyone in the world. Because
quite literally,
everyone is coming out of the water. Yeah. Everyone's going to have to at some point deal with the fact that my death is a lot closer to me than it was before these things came.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're going to take over and they're going to destroy my entire nation, you know, that means my death a lot sooner and a lot more imminent than me just dying of old age, you know, in my 90s. And so I think that you have characters kind of dealing with their demons differently. Even the people who are like worshippers of the kaiju is like, that's how they're going to deal with their demons, is they're going to turn to these other idols, these other gods. And you have characters who are, they're deciding, I'm going to fight. You know, why are they fighting? What is their reason for fighting? Are they only fighting just to protect the world, or are they fighting to like prove something? Are they fighting so that they can go out there and maybe die themselves in combat to punish themselves? You know, there are so many different things where each character is kind of having to deal with that, and you're mm-hmm. getting to see all of it, and it's a lot to take in. And so it can really only be one-liners. Otherwise, that would be the most emotionally draining movie ever. You leave there and you're like, oh, I'm so mad. Yeah, it's like, you know, can we really handle movies that deal with everyone's emotions
mm-hmm.
on a huge grand scale? And I think that's probably, I mean, that's why I would argue that had Pacific Rim been Transformers characters fighting these alien characters, it would have been much more popular in the States. More people would have gone to see it. And had it still been Guillermo del Toro, not Michael Bay. But like, yeah. You know, because I think that it is a true escape from having to really, you get to deal with demons and your own personal stuff in that, but you don't have to deal with so much that you leave feeling like you've just, you know, spent a counseling
session. Are you saying that's why we're drawn to spectacle? Like that's why we're drawn to these big movies?
Summer movies?
Because you get a taste of emotion. You get a taste of issues of people's like, deals, but not so much that you can't remove yourself and just, you know, and just enjoy the show.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, one thing I want to say, and I don't want to like completely flip things the opposite way, but I'm coming to kind of feel like we're not drawn to spectacle anymore. I don't feel like we're drawn to the big budget blockbusters anymore, even though we go see them. I feel like, you know, part of when we were originally kind of formulating what this specific episode of this podcast would be was kind of like, why do we like action movies? I don't think people like action movies anymore. I really don't. I really think we One thing I've been kind of developing is that I think that we've lost our sense of wonder. That kind of wonder that we get when we go to the theater and we see these big things on screen and we're just, you know, that's part of cinema. I mean, you want a good story. I mean, there's obviously something to dislike about a story that's phoned in and you don't really connect to. But I think overall people are starting to get bored with spectacle. I think we are starting to lose the sense of when you were a kid and you're just like, oh my gosh, you know, it's like your kid in a candy store, you're a kid in a movie theater. You know, I remember when I was a kid and I saw Jurassic Park, you know, I was just, you know, jaw on the floor. My eyes were as wide as they could be. And I still try to connect to that in every movie when I go to the theater because, you know, I mean, anything that I see on screen that impresses me, it's just like, it makes me feel like a kid. But I think people are starting to get very cynical and get drawn mm-hmm. away from that because, and I think, you know, it's everywhere because, you know, we see things like that guy was saying about Pacific Rim. Oh, you know, just... there's just nothing here.
Well, full disclosure, the guy really liked the movie.
Okay.
But he still said there was nothing there.
Yeah. He says there's nothing here, and it's like, is spectacle enough? Well, no. But see, when we have movies that are spectacle and have substance, well, then we hear things like, well, that was just too preachy. I know, I'm serious. And it sounds funny, but like, that's what I get. Anytime I come out of a movie... and I really enjoy it because, man, you know, there was some problems. I mean, I'm a filmmaker. I know what's wrong with the movie. I know there's holes. I know that there's characters that could have been better developed. I know that when things go really wrong, I just saw Elysium and there was a lot of stuff there that I thought was going to be so much better. The spectacle mm-hmm. and the visuals were great, but the movie just was really kind of bad. It was botched. I hear, even if I come out of a movie liking something and going, man, that was just super entertaining, there's somebody that's going to be like, crap, that was a crap movie. Like, I mean, like, I understand disliking, say, like, Iron Man 3 from a comic perspective, from a story perspective and everything, but Iron Man 3 was really cool to me because there was, you know, I love the ending even though, because a lot of endings get very cartoonish and a lot of endings just go over the top and, like, you know, like Man of Steel, it's just, like, buildings falling down and people getting thrown through another building and that building falling down and it's kind of boring even though it's really big. But I think that there's some line that's there, you know, for me, like Iron Man 3, I thought they did a really inventive, very, very big ending. So, I mean, I really enjoyed it. So I can enjoy it on the spectacle level, and then I really appreciate it when we have a movie like Avengers, who does the biggest spectacle that you can get at the time, and then you do really good character development, you do a fantastic story. And I think that we have taken a baseline of it has to be perfect spectacle, it has to be perfect story for people to really, really like it. And I think that that's, maybe I'm taking a very broad stroke, but I really think we lost our sense of wonder.
I would definitely go agree with you on that. I mean, I think that you can talk about like everything leading up to, and I'm going to continue to piggyback off of the Avengers because I feel like it is such a good, mm-hmm. good pointer of what like a huge, great, all-around perfect summer blockbuster is from last year. You talk about everything leading up to that with Captain America, with Thor. You know, outside of maybe the Iron Man movies, most people didn't like the other ones that much. He's like, yeah, Thor was okay, Captain America was okay. I thought Captain America was a great movie. Captain America was awesome.
Captain America is killer, man.
If you love Captain America, if you know anything about the character at all and you go into it and watch it, it's like, that's awesome. If you don't, and you just take it at face value of, this is like it is very good, and there's no huge spectacle to it because it is like it's still 1940s and there's not really mm-hmm. anything huge with that, but it's a beautiful movie to watch and a lot of fun, and it is a lot of character, and I think that maybe there was too much substance there for the people who went to it just to see the spectacle, just to see the blockbuster kind of idea.
Thor was lacking, I thought, in story and development of what happened on Earth. But man, when you got up to Asgard and you had
the daddy issues.
Yeah.
Great. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But I mean,
Marvel characters and their daddy issues. I love it.
But I mean, to see, you know, Asgard in just this brilliant Technicolor, beautiful CGI format. Even if the movie itself lacked, okay, the movie it lacks. I get that. And I agree with that. But I mean, the Bifrost and, you know, the whole, like, just the whole spectacle of that movie was really, really great for them to, I mean, think about it. When you were a kid and you're reading a Thor comic book or any comic book, really, did you ever think that you'd be sitting in a theater going, man, that's Asgard, and they're fighting over Asgard, and that spectacle is there, and
people, Idris Elba's there too,
and Idris Elba's there too.
Well, and I think that's the problem. We forget that not long ago, an Avengers movie was impossible.
Right.
The fact that I got to see in my lifetime probably like 20 some comic book movies,
yes,
like that's happened prior to like maybe 2000. Yeah. I'd say there were less than 20 comic movies in all of history, and they were terrible. Like,
I find myself in awe that
people. What's wrong with
Dolph Lundgren? Punisher. I find myself in awe of.
Hey, you should watch that Punisher short film, though. It is fantastic.
No, it's great.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And I've seen this.
It's really
good. I find myself in awe of people who are complaining about this. I can't really, because I mean, I got to the point, you know, several years ago.
Oh, bring us back for a second. What are people complaining about?
Well, people are complaining that. Well, I guess they're not complaining about the fact that they've seen something like spectacular, such as these things that we're talking about, these movies that we're talking about. I can't believe that they're complaining to the point where they're like, that was stupid. I can't believe I paid money to see that. Really? Really? I understand. Listen, Transformers 2 is a terrible movie. I hate Transformers 2, and I can't believe I paid money for it. Even though the spectacle was there, and it was really cool to see the robots and everything, that was great. It was just really noisy and clunky and bad. So there's a difference between a bad movie, but then a movie like Thor that has its problems, but it's just a cool movie.
Yeah, and you just got to see Thor on a big screen, and like,
yes,
you know, my parents would, you know, they would probably be like, okay, you know, seeing Hulk on the big screen, that's not a big deal because I saw him on TV all the time. Mm-hmm. Seeing Batman on the big screen, that's not a big deal. I saw him on TV all the time growing up as a kid.
Slightly different, but yeah.
It is. But Adam West Batman.
Think about Adam West in The Dark Knight Returns.
It has its values.
Oh, man.
That show was a comedy as much as it was anything else.
Yeah. If you had like a Frank Miller type, you know, like pulling in the Batman at Dark Knight Returns and have the old Batman be actually Adam West, I would spontaneously combust.
That seems like something that College Humor should be doing sometimes.
All right.
But I mean, I think that's something where like the fact that we're complaining about going to see any comic book movie at this point is just, unless it is absolutely, you talk about, okay, Green Lantern. You can complain about that. We give you free reign to complain about that. It was terrible.
Well, but in general, what we're saying is there's a lot of value in going to see summer blockbusters.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people are not. I think people are quick to forget that because yeah. I really think, and I was kind of like trying to do a little research and think back, you know, about big movies and stuff. I feel like starting around 93 with Jurassic Park, people started to get. That's where we really got into the big spectacle of, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is on screen.
Talk about like Independence Day. That was,
you know, you go to Independence Day, you go to The Matrix, and you're seeing things that you're like, wow, I never thought that anything like this was possible on the big screen. You know, and then now we're getting it all the time.
All the time.
I mean, we're getting such big spectacle. And I think for me, watching action movies over the past 10 years versus the 10 years prior, just very, very different because so much more CGI that's available to create just bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So I really think people are maybe getting numb to it. And just because of, not necessarily because of like box office results, because I don't really know anybody that doesn't want to go to a movie and just see something and be entertained. And I don't really know a lot of people who don't do that very often. Like, you know, go every weekend or something, or every other weekend. So I don't think we're not necessarily just going. I think we're getting tired of, like, we're being nitpicky. Because, you know, I don't want to say, you know, we should just be thankful that there's something on screen that's mm-hmm. that's really big and huge. Because I think that's the lazy way out. And that's really not the point I'm trying to make. But I think there's a fine line there of going, is this really not worth watching? Because it's really cool.
Yeah, well, I think you're kind of, you've half answered a question that I have.
Okay.
And I want to throw this out there. Like, do you feel that the number of flops we saw this summer is giving us direct evidence that the notion of audiences simply going to the theater to turn off their brains mm-hmm. is false? I mean, are audiences, even summer audiences, are they looking for substance over flash at the end of the day? Because we get some flash is easy now.
I guess I don't know what they're drawn to, actually. I mean, I guess if, you know, if you're going to have, I mean, like I said, I think there's a fine line, because I hear people who get movies that have a lot of substance and they say it's too preachy.
Well, they like Flash, but they need something else there. I mean, like, think about it. We had so many blockbusters, blockbusters in quotation marks. You know, the Lone Ranger was one of the biggest flops of all time. Most of the movies, like, what, White House Down flopped, Two Guns flopped. Uh-huh. You know, we have lots of animated movies, which animated movies almost always across the board, like, are successes, because people take their kids, and we talked about this two podcasts ago when we talked about Despicable Me. You know, people love to take their kids to animated movies, but we have animated movies flopping. So when we have so many, Star Trek. Right. Didn't flop, but it didn't do near as well as people had expected. It didn't even do as well as the first one, which it had more hype going into the second one. Like, are people really wanting to, like, grab onto something with their Flash now? Because, like, we're anesthetized to Flash.
I think that that's probably, I mean, it's probably incredibly true just for, like, now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at, IMDb has a list of movies over the history, like, starting with 1977 with Star Wars, of the summer blockbuster movies from each year. And just quick answers, whether these movies are considered movies that you have to see in your lifetime. Star Wars.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dawn of the Dead.
Yep.
Yeah.
Alien.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Star Wars Episode 5. Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Back to the Future.
Yes.
Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Predator.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I mean, like,
RoboCop.
Understand what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah. Yeah.
RoboCop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
First Batman. 1989 Batman. Michael Keaton.
Doesn't hold up as well, but yeah, just, I still think
yeah. You still think right. You should see it. Yeah. Last Crusade.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Total Recall.
Not a big fan.
Doesn't hold up well.
Doesn't hold up well, yeah.
Terminator 2.
Holds up very well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Batman Returns.
Doesn't hold up at all.
Okay,
up.
Jurassic Park.
Absolutely.
I think Mark likes it okay.
All right, and here you go. Here's the last couple. Forrest Gump.
Yep.
We're just going to skip that one. Mortal Kombat does not count. Die Hard with a Vengeance.
I love Die Hard with a Vengeance, but I don't know if it's one that you
I don't know if it's one you have to see. In Independence Day, you have to see.
I feel like you can just do a Die Hard day.
Yeah.
A Time to Kill. I think that maybe isn't a must-see, but it's a good movie.
Well, it's got some memorable lines.
Yeah. Men in Black.
I think they should burn it out.
Men in Black.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump forward to 2000 and stop there. Gladiator.
Yep.
Now going forward there, I think you can talk about, like, you know, some of these movies, they're hit or miss. Bourne Identity's in there. Spider-Man, the first one's in there. X2's in there.
Especially at the time.
Iron Man, the first Star Trek reboot, you know. Avengers is the most recent one they have on there. But I think prior to that, that was like every year straight through from 1977 to 2000 pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say 90% or more of those movies, we were like, you have to see that.
Oh, yeah, lifetime. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what I think we've lost. You know, I look forward to the ones that are coming out now, and we're like, Captain America, I would never tell my kid. I would tell my kid that he needs to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But most parents would be like, they, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
I wouldn't even tell my friends.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even tell my friends you have to see this movie.
Here's what I was trying to figure out. And this is on what you're saying. Am I just getting old and I'm an adult and I'm not seeing all of these? This, like, I'm not approaching this in the same way as when I was a kid and I was just kind of in awe? Or are we just not getting the spectacle as big as, because I mean, once you get how big can we get with these movies?
Yeah.
How much bigger can you get than the Avengers?
Well, that's what I want to
know. Like
when I think of people,
about to find out.
Yeah, when I think of people going to these blockbusters, and part of the question that I wanted to raise, it is something that I think Joss Whedon has answered for us with his answer of like what he's going to do with Avengers 2, because Avengers 1 was so big. It was everything that you could want in a summer blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that it defines why people go to the movies during the summer. That's what they're hoping to see. every movie that they pay money to see, they're probably hoping that it is the Avengers.
Yeah.
I mean, from what it gives, not necessarily the subject
matter. That's what I'm saying. That has set the baseline, and I don't think it should be the baseline.
Well, but that's the thing. So Joss Whedon knows what he's done, right?
Right.
He knows that he's created this incredible spectacle. Mm-hmm. Had great characters. He did some things that I think a lot of movies fall short on. And so they say, well, what can you possibly do next, Joss? And he goes, the trick is not to go bigger, but to go deeper.
Yeah.
And I think in a world where people go to summer movies.
Perfect choice of words.
you know, I think that's why we're getting flops. I think that's why people are going to see stuff opening weekend. They're not going three or four times. You know,
mm-hmm.
like you said about Pacific Rim, when was the last time you went to a movie and you said, I need to basically walk outside, buy another ticket, and go right back in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to do that when I saw the Avengers. I wanted to do that when I saw
the Avengers.
I wanted to do three times.
Yeah, so I wanted from Thursday night until Friday night, three times.
Exactly. Like when I saw Saving Private Ryan the first time,
I basically
left and I came back the next day and I watched it again.
When I saw The Matrix, I was like, I cannot go the rest of my life without ever, you know, going to see this before it gets out of the theater. I saw it like four times in the theater.
So you're taking things that are we've seen spectacle now. You know, people know what it's like to go and turn their brains off, but I think we're tired of turning our brains off. I think we want to go and we want to go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Even and in the summer, I don't even think deep is very deep.
Yeah.
I think deep is fairly shallow, but I think compared to a lot of the stuff we get, I mean, like, you're seriously talking about multiple movies coming out each weekend that have budgets over $150 million. And for those who don't have, you know, most movies don't have budgets that are over $150.
No, most budgets on movie that are but movies don't have budgets that are over $50 million.
Yeah, $50 million is probably, for even an action movie, an okay action movie, you know, without anything over the top. $50 million is probably okay. You put out an independent film. Oh, well, I think The Conjuring was like $8 million or $12 million or something.
Absolutely.
You know, and it, you know, so the fact that it's made like a bajillion dollars, I mean, there's some producers that are very happy. But that's like, that's substance over Flash. I mean, there's scary stuff there that rode that.
But see, I don't know, because I feel like I was saying, like, we get movies with substance and people harp on the story, or they harp on that it's too preachy, or that, you know, that they didn't do this well enough. And
why I think deep is not too deep. For a summer audience.
That's the thing, is I feel like...
That's the stuff you wait till October to show.
And that's
November.
That's where I want to maybe point towards, and I feel like maybe what Joss is going to get at with the next film. And I'm sorry for using it on a first name basis, like I know him or something like that.
My boy Joss.
Me and Jay Jones.
Yeah. We were hanging out yesterday. He was like, look, Griffin.
Griffy Griff. G-Riff.
But I feel like with Age of Ultron, which is the next storyline, it's not based on the recent comic. I think that he has an opportunity, and probably will take it, knowing him, to go really deep with those characters, because I think on some level, to escalate to the point that Thanos is going to be the threat, and that, and for those of you who don't know, that is a character you saw after the first credit set in the Avengers movie, and that you'll see bits more of in this next Guardians of the Galaxy movie, and I feel like you maybe see a little bit of in this next, the following summer's Avengers movie. To build up to that, he's going to have to take some time. Because that is such a deep and such a spectacle movie, to the point that it's really going to take some commitment from people to really actually enjoy what he's going to do. But I think that the question is, at what point do we want just the deep movies? Because I'm thinking about, for the last couple of years, what's been my favorite movie of the year. Outside of last year being definitely The Avengers,
mm-hmm.
this year it was a movie that came out in like January. The previous year before that, I think it was a movie that came out in the fall.
So the ones that come out right before Oscar selection time.
Yeah. And so I think about that. I'm like, oh, I love those movies. Why am I not really excited that I just got to see, you know, Captain America in the theaters?
Right.
And there is a time and place for everything, which is why we're specifically trying to address why go see summer movies. Like, what are people's expectations during the summer movie? And I think we've kind of hit on that. There's a certain spectacle.
There's a ton of movies I like that are not anywhere near any kind of spectacle at all, you know, of course. But, like, as far as for spectacle, I think people are, you know, it's why horror movies are always number one in the box office the first weekend they come out. Any horror movie is going to do really well. And if you don't believe me, watch when the next, I guess it's Insidious Chapter 2 that's coming out soon. It's just, I mean, it's going to be, it's going to get swallowed up in the summer a little bit, but they always do really well and they're made for very little money. It's because people know what they are going to get when they go to a horror movie. They want to get that thrill. They want to be excited. They want to be scared. They want some kind of reaction. And I feel like what we're doing with the spectacle that we have now in the comic book movies, in movies like Pacific Rim, in the big action movies, I feel like we are trying for something better and bigger. As we go bigger, we're trying for something better. And I think people this is a very broad stroke thing. I don't mean it for everybody, but I think a lot of times why they flop, like Pacific Rim, I think it flopped because of marketing. I don't think people understand exactly what they were going to go see necessarily. But I think for the bigger ones like Captain America, I think is that people want to just get a really big shock or they want to really dig deep. And I don't think both works necessarily.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see, I think with his next Cap movie, I think that's going to be the problem with that is that it is going to be really deep about who the character is. And I think that's something where the spectacle, it'll be interesting to see what with this next wave of really big action movies with is spectacle enough and is deepness enough. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the reason that I feel like I'll go see every movie that's I like District 9, but I'd heard enough bad things about Elysium. I probably could have not gone to see that, but I did because I was like, I want to see the effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I left there with the effects in mind. I was happy. Yeah. I was a happy camper. Mm-hmm. That was a great movie, but it was a little preachy. it taught a sermon. It taught a full-length sermon. And so...
Well, we have, there's other times to talk about Elysium.
But I think that's where... Like, I think with that, I really would have probably valued that movie a little bit more had it not been so deep. Hmm. And so I think with maybe Pacific Rim, I did like Pacific Rim was because it was a good mix, and I'm sad that it didn't do as well in the box office.
Well, I mean, I think Elysium, for me, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack about it, but I didn't think it was preachy. I think it tackled a very
controversial
thing in a big budget movie. And came off as preachy because that fact was there. I didn't think it was saying, this is what you should do, this is what you should not do necessarily. It just presented it there because it's not, nobody was saying, this is right, this is wrong, this is, and preaching a sermon.
Which goes back to your point from earlier about things getting too deep during the summer.
Right.
You want some substance, but if you get too deep, it's not what people are wanting during the summer.
I think people in general, because I really like, if you're going to tackle substance, cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think even better, because it's a great thing to have a Pacific Rim movie that doesn't tackle a big, controversial thing, and just says, we have some robots that have to punch some monsters in the face, and that's good enough for me. That makes it really awesome. But then, you want to go to the Wolverine and see him battle with, what do I do if I'm immortal? You want to see him, and there's substance there. That was what was great about the Wolverine, was that there was, this personal struggle. That's why I really liked Iron Man 3, because Iron Man 1 and 2 were all about, I'm a big billionaire, here's all my fancy stuff, I got brought down to size, and now I'm going to go be, I am Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 3 finally got into, you're Iron Man, good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
And the post-traumatic stress of after the Avengers and stuff like that in Iron Man 3 was, I really thought it was, they did a fantastic job with it, because I really like Shane Black and he does good movies. I'm having a hard time defining exactly what we're looking for in general as a culture, just in movies. When we come out of a movie that is just spectacular in the literal sense, and, people are complaining about it. And I really don't know what we need or what we're looking for on a general level. And it really surprises me that I really think that we've lost that sense of wonder, because I really feel like if Jurassic Park came out now, people would go,
what if it was out in 3D?
Well, yeah. But I mean, if that story had never been done, You know, we get Matrix movies that, you know, granted the third Matrix movie was an absolute mess, but the spectacle was grand. I mean, it was a really entertaining movie, and I left going, I wish they'd gone somewhere else with the story. But, you know, so I think if the Matrix came out now, people would go, oh, that's a pretty cool movie. You know, I think if, you know, and we had a lot of, like, you know, even there's a lot of the sequels where the story is, they're pushing it out. They're pushing it out just to make money. And so the story is going to reflect that. But I think the spectacle is still just it still amazes me. And that's what I think. I'm a little sad that people are losing that, because, you know, look at like Pirates 3, and people hated Pirates 3 because, oh, why'd they do that with it? Why'd they, you know, have this whole storyline, this, that, and the other. But like that scene where they're in the, you know, the typhoon, and they're spinning around the ocean, and they're about to, you know, go into this big black hole, and they're shooting cannons at each other. I just thought it was great. It made me feel like a kid, and I look for those moments in films and in the movie theater experience especially, that really make me feel like a kid again. And I could just get to go, this is awesome, this is on screen. I think we've lost that.
Okay, well, let me, since we're having a difficult time pinpointing down.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't
really... I'll be honest, I don't know.
Well, it wasn't really the goal, I guess, to give a definitive answer. This isn't like yes, no, right, the end of the story. It's just, it's us trying to work through it. So let's take it from a why do you think other people and make it personal. So, Griffin, why are you going to go see movies during the summer next year?
Because that's what I did as a kid, and that's what I look forward to doing as an adult. Like, even though, like, that's what the summers were about, was like mom and dad had time off on the weekends, and it was either maybe too hot or maybe it was raining that Saturday, and it's like, let's go watch a movie, kids. And so I remember growing up and going to see all those movies, and then I remember getting older and being like I was early high school, maybe late middle school, when National Treasure came out. I love that crap. Oh my gosh. National Treasure, that movie, I watched that movie so many times. But then I'll go back and watch, like, and I think about it even now, like the Goonies and those, like Super 8, those movies that like make me feel like, even though those, I know some of those movies didn't even come out during the summer, and I think the Goonies may have not even been out, like, whenever I could have gone to see it and known what that was, known that that was a thing. But, you know, I think about those movies as like, I think about them as a time, that the time that I was watching them was during the summer. Because that's what you did. You got off and you were just like, it's time to relax. Let's go watch a movie that really doesn't ask much of us other than just to enjoy it. And so I go really and truly most summers just to enjoy. I just want to go see something that I'll enjoy. And so maybe that for me is, I kind of don't go see a lot of deep movies. I'm like, I just want to relax. That's what the summer's all about. It's like sunny outside, or maybe it's raining outside. I just want to go relax. Mm-hmm.
When there is a certain beauty to relaxing, to resting,
yeah,
you know, having your imagination sparked.
Yeah. And so I think that that's probably a big part of it for me, is just the fact that I can go shut off for a little bit and just watch this crazy movie. And, you know, I know that the movies that are coming out during the summer, they're coming out during the summer for a reason, because people have put a lot of money into them and that they expect them to do well.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously it usually is the best. It tends to be some of the best spectacle movies that you can find.
Mark.
Same question, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. I really think that desire in me is still there from when I was a kid, much like Griffin was saying. I think I really like to see the grand adventures. And I think, you know, it's... this whole thing about me, you know, kind of, and this is kind of a new realization for me, and just kind of hearing this summer in particular, you know, people that have disliked movies from all different circles of friends and for different reasons, and coming out of the theater going, that was dumb. And me just, you know, kind of having this like stars in my eyes of like, that was just, I just really enjoyed that. Cause I just think I really enjoy the adventure and being able to be a part of that. I mean, I've always had I'm a writer, so I have an imagination, and to have that stoked without me having to sit there and just grind it out and create my own stories is relaxing. It is a, you know, relaxation thing. So, I mean, I really just enjoy film on a grand scale. I mean, I enjoy the small movies. I love digging into really personal stories and smaller movies as well. But as far as going to see a big spectacle, I know what I want to see on the screen, the big screen. And there's a reason why it's a big screen. There's a reason why the sound is surround sound, and it's the clearest definition that it can be, and it's you want to feel a part of an adventure that's grander than you could really get in reality. And I think that's one thing that does draw people, is that they're looking for that. And I think we've been set up as a culture, like I said, to really want something bigger and better. Once it gets bigger and better, we want that to be the new mark. But I really think, for me, I think my baseline is not the Avengers. I think my baseline is just something really cool that's really entertaining and done pretty well. And I think I go into it with that. And if I get something like the Avengers, I mean, even better, man. I mean, I'm just blown away at that point. So I think I'm still trying to stay on the kid level and try to really have that sense of wonder about the adventure.
Yeah. I would say mine probably echoes a lot of what you guys are saying. There's a nostalgia factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely there.
The nostalgia factor is partly from childhood and partly just from the wonder of seeing something. I think we often during the summer see movies that are larger than life. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the character biopics, the gritty, real, character-driven stuff that I get to see in early January and, November, December, right before Oscar nods are coming out. Those are great. Those are intense. Mm-hmm. They're well written.
I very much enjoy them for the same reasons.
And they're fun to watch. But typically, and besides like a December movie like The Hobbit or mm-hmm. something, Lord of the Rings coming out, Harry Potter stuff coming out in December, you typically have that type of movie. Those movies don't take me places. They don't encircle me in wonderment. They don't mm-hmm. take me to a world that I couldn't live in. They don't make me think about the world around me. Typically, they just make me think about the situations that I might have to deal with mm-hmm. in a gritty or real or even romantic comedy kind of way.
Yeah.
I mean, like there are lots of reasons. I would say I go the summer blockbusters, but I think that helped a lot. Yeah. So we are running kind of long.
Okay.
So, and we've got a lot left to do. So sure. we're going to fast track some of the rest of this stuff.
Okay.
So, I hope that everyone else out there, as always, if you have ideas, if you want to tell us why you go to summer movies, or why you go to movies in general, we would love to hear that. And we can tell you about how to get in contact with us later. But some things I always do on the show and things I want to hit. I know we basically hit every summer movie ever, but specifically with Wolverine and Pacific Rim, I want to hear, one, come on moment from each one of them. Since I don't want to sell these movies short.
Okay.
So one come on moment from each movie.
Go for it, Greg.
My Wolverine moment was the fact that the claws were cut off, and then he grew more claws. He grew his old claws out of the old claws. It was just come on, really? Right. How can he get the claws back all of a sudden? Like, how can they push that? No, come on, really? and then I think with Pacific Rim, I don't really enjoy the like always like ending where like people are like hugging or like making out at the mm-hmm. very, very end. And so I was just like, really, is that necessary? Like, can we like there's not like prudish stuff in me that wants to not see that. It's just like that happens at the end of every big action movie, is like two people are either making out or hugging and like a passionate embrace. And I was like, can you do something different? Please, someone, anywhere, do something different.
Most of my come on moments are when things are just so easy, and I think in Wolverine, or when it's really telegraphed, like in Wolverine with the guy that ended up turning, he was supposed to he really never had a role. He was like the ninja guy that was the archer.
Boyfriend?
Yeah, he was supposed to protect her, and then he ended up just betraying everybody by helping out the Viper Lady and then he just ultimately ended up just kind of dying. And then he switched, his role again to where now I want to help everybody. Oh, now you want to help everybody. Appreciate that. all of that was just kind of like, you kind of saw like that he was, not a very well developed character, and you kind of saw his motivations were off, and I thought that was a little too easy. And with Pacific Rim, upon first viewing of Pacific Rim, I was just kind of enthralled and like, oh my gosh, this is just the coolest thing. But when you go back, there's a lot of little things that the wooden kind of like not developed things kind of say come on for me, and that's part of that was like the ending where they're, of course, you know, I didn't want him to die in the end, but you know, I thought he should die in the end. And when he comes floating back up to the top, I was like, oh, come on, man. Oh, come on. Really? And they have kind of a happy ending, but I you know, Pacific Rim is just a cool movie. And there was a, I don't know. It's hard for me to pinpoint it. Come on, man. Other than that one,
there's so many hypothetical, silly things about robots fighting monsters.
But yeah, and maybe also too, just some of the acting was probably the acting was. It's just like, you know, they had the money to pay better actors.
Okay, I will say the guy that was the son that was like he really just hated Raleigh with the dog. You know, his character was so like stereotypical, like Iceman from Top Gun, you know, like I'm just going to be the antagonist. So like he really didn't have the motivation to do it. He was just kind of being a jerk. I was like, come on, man.
He's the best. He's Iceman.
Yeah.
Whatever. Come on, man. I think you're both really close to mine too. In Wolverine, I think it was when the claws came back out. I was like, I don't understand why we went through this.
I never liked the bone claws.
Well, I mean, I know you have to have the bone claws because without the bone claws, there's no justification for the adamantium claws, et cetera, et cetera. But it didn't do it for me. And
I loved how the bone claws like could smash the through the animanium of the Silver Soldier or the whatever Silver Samurai.
It's just gonna make me angry.
The entire third act.
One brief moment in that movie there where I was like, come on, but like the rest of it, like.
And with Pacific Rim, I felt a lot the same way you're talking about, Morgan. Just, you know, and the conceptually, Pacific Rim was a silly movie, you know, silly concept.
Yeah.
Made less silly.
Yeah.
So I'm already predisposed to think the things that I would normally say. Come on. I'm already like, punch him again.
Yeah, punch him. Rocket elbow. Yeah. Boom. Yes.
So
are you not out of fuel yet?
So with Pacific Rim, I think the thing that I liked, but it was really kind of a come on moment, like secretly I was rooting for, was when Ron Perlman came back at the end.
Oh,
when he cut himself out of the monster at the end. Oh, I was like, come on, he just got eaten. You know,
I love that though.
I know. Let's see, on the inside, I was like, I want Ron Perlman to stay be around, because then they make a second one. I want Ron Perlman to be in the second
one.
But I'm like, it means more if he got eaten because he was being a jerk.
Yeah.
But okay, so now to the pinnacle of the podcast.
Okay.
The reason we're all here, favorite moments from the movie. You know, this is what moved you. So, Griffin. Mark.
I forgot about the sword.
Yeah.
In Pacific Rim. Now you decide to use the sword?
Yeah.
Good time to bring it out. Thanks.
Come on.
Sorry.
So I think just like the sacrifice that happens within Pacific Rim, just that all the people are, like, it seems like everybody's really willing to die to save. And I think that's probably like a really, it's that in any movie, I get really attached to those characters who are willing to martyr themselves for the sake of like other characters. And so I think that those moments were always really good. With Wolverine, that's one where I really, there was nothing in that movie that really moved me and made me feel like, oh God, I need to go like cry now. Or that I need to be really excited for. I think if anything, just the story of him kind of battling with the immortality, that was, I appreciated that. And I enjoy those Wolverine stories. I'm not a huge Wolverine fan. Not that I don't think people who are. It's just that I'm not a huge Wolverine fan, but those are the, like, Old Man Logan is a story that I do enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's, and also any story where he's having to deal with his loss. In effect, his immortality. I really appreciate those. And so I think that was probably just that overarching story of him was, I was like, I'll buy into this a little bit. So
there's really not a whole lot I didn't like about Pacific Rim. I mean, Sacre Pentecost is just one of the greatest characters. I mean, when he puts his fingers up to his ear, turns his head, and he says, yes, sir. Oh, man. That's just, I know that probably stole your. There's so, any scene that Sacre Pentecost, Idris Elba was in, was just one of best things about summer.
If I could have just said Idris Elba, I would have. Dang it. Why did I just say Idris Elba? There we, no.
Yeah, you didn't necessarily have to talk about things that, that moved you.
Well, he said move me.
Well, I mean, you know.
Idris Elba, that was my favorite thing.
Idris Elba moved me.
Idris Elba always moves me.
Is the question things that moved you? Or like
no, it's just your favorite thing from the movie.
Okay,
favorite thing. And sometimes that favorite thing moves you. Sometimes it just makes you think.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just makes you go, yes!
Yeah.
You know, just whatever you left the theater saying, like, that would be the reason I watched this movie again.
Well, the reason I went back and watched Pacific Rim, honestly, was the sense of urgency and direness, you know, the reality that they gave to it.
Mm-hmm.
That they said, that they put you into the world that says, this is really happening in this world, you know, versus like, you know, like a Transformers movie. It was like, wouldn't this be cool if this happened? Oh, and then there's this car, and it turns into, you know. I think with Pacific Rim, there was this very, death is real type of feeling. And I clung to that. It really made me root for this movie, and made me root for the characters, and made me root for the story, but it really made me root for the movie, because just to see a big, 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 big movie like that and have a sense of personal connection to it was really, really great. That's why I really wanted to go see it again. With Wolverine, I mean, I am a big Wolverine fan. And I'm glad that, and that's a kid thing, because I watched the cartoon, I read the books with him in it, which is always drawn the Wolverine. So to see him on the screen is always fun for me, but to see him on his own in a story that actually did him a lot of justice was fantastic. And you know, anytime his claws come out and he's just acting like one bad dude, it really, I just enjoy. I'm not even gonna lie. I mean, like, the first time I saw, you know, Wolverine Origins, I enjoyed it because it was Wolverine, but then I went back and I was like, wow, this is a bad movie. But the Wolverine really did him justice, and I thought the setting was great, and just, I was eating it up.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a little more on Griffin's side with Wolverine. I'm not a Wolverine fan.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been more of like an underdog kind of character.
You guys.
I'm a Nightcrawler fan.
Yeah, I love Nightcrawler.
And I think his tortured priest self was,
yeah,
just really identify with it.
Oh, really?
I
mean,
no
listen,
idea.
Listen though, I am an X-Men fan.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much an any superhero fan. And I even enjoyed X3, but let's not go there.
No, I'm like
it's just like shared his like AA moment.
I'm a fan of bad superhero movies, and my name is Mark.
No, well, see, the thing is, I'm like a superhero hipster guy. Like anything that's cool, like I hate.
Aww.
You know, I'm like, everybody likes Superman. I hate Superman.
Yeah.
He's stupid. Everybody likes Wolverine. Not really like Wolverine. But I mean, well, so with the Wolverine movie, what I did like, besides the fact that it was way better than the other film that they did with him, was his relationship with
Mariko.
I just love their interactions, their banter.
She was great.
Basically, yeah. I mean, how she molded him through like genuine concern. I think, you know, everyone else was kind of trying to manipulate him, but she knew what it was to kind of hate her life, and what it was to appreciate what she does have. And I think she, through her story with Logan, impart some of that to him, which gives his life some meaning, or more meaning than he thought.
I think she really represented the like childlike awe of, like, she was all, you know, she was looking for the Wolverine. She finally found him. She always kind of stayed in awe of him the whole movie. I thought that was cool.
Well, and what's similar to me is that in Pacific Rim, much like we didn't have to see like Mariko and Logan like get it on to understand that they cared about each other.
I think what's confusing us is Maku and Mariko.
Yeah, and Mako
and Pacific Rim. Whatever.
So we see Riley and Mako in Pacific Rim, and it's one of the first movies in a long time that is able to have a male and female, like, main and protagonist kind of, like, hero, that they don't have to have sex to be able to do their job. They don't have to, like, fall in love. They don't have to, you know, they don't have to do any of these romantic kind of cliches. And I love it because they're able to mold each other. They're able to help each other. They're able to better each other. And it doesn't have to be through romantic means. And I'm a big fan of romantic means in general, but I love the fact that like it just didn't become a vehicle to tell the same thing we always hear. I mean, and I know it was Griffin's come on moment that like the movie ended with them hugging, but at the same time, I love the fact that they were hugging and not kissing. And it seems like a very small thing, but we didn't have to have our heroes fall in love. I mean, obviously there is some of there's affinity for each other because they're doing that like type of they're having that relationship where, like I said, it's molding each other. They're becoming like one person. They're becoming really deep friends. They're not just like, oh, I met you. You can fight well. I guess in the next scene, we're going to wake up in bed together because that's what we do. You know? But, you know, that oversimplification, oversimplification of romantic interest and the idea, it kind of went away with that idea that people can be effective without being in love with each other. And I don't see that a lot. And I think that's more true to what happens in reality. I mean, like when you think of like soldiers or anyone who is part of a team, everyone's not like banging each other to become better at killing things. You know, it's, I think that that story being told without that part of it was one of my favorite things. The fact that I never had to deal with like this, because they would have had time to deal with it. They would have had to try to get me to believe that these two characters fell in love in like three little, you know, 1 minute scenes. And even the best director, I think, would have had a hard time convincing me of that. Now, on the other hand, in what they did, they convinced me that they were willing to die for each other. So I was like, that right there. So we have relationship. Obviously, I'm a big relationship person. I'm just finding this out about myself based on watching these two movies. I just love what these the friendships that we're seeing in these movies. And how they shape the main characters. So that was my favorite moment. Well, that and Elbow Rocket
was awesome.
It was pretty amazing. So, so with that, I just want to thank our guests, Mark and Griffin, and give you guys a chance to pimp anything that you would like to pimp within reason. So, Mark, people have enjoyed listening to you talk ad nauseum this episode. So,
I told you.
So let people know how they can get up with you, what you're doing, how they can follow you.
Well, currently I'm writing a lot, so I'm kind of in the background doing my own thing, coming up with stories and scripts. But I'm very proud of the fact that the team that I was with working on the 48-hour film project in Greensboro, we won. And we got Best Picture and a couple other awards like Best Cinematography. And you can check that out if you go to the Greensboro 48-hour Film Project. Just search for 48-hour Film Project Greensboro. You pull it up and it has us there because we're the Best Picture and it lists all the winners. And there's a lot of good films there. You can see that, you know, it's a competition where you have to make a film in 48 hours basically. And so we did that, got Best Picture. So you can check that out there. And then you can also just find me on Facebook and, I've got all my, short films posted there that I've done. And so.
Cool.
Yeah.
Griffin.
Yeah. Still writing a lot as well. I kind of feel like we're the writers of the, but yeah. So hopefully, I'm blogging every week, which I need to get that one up soon. So that's DearCynic.com. DearCynic. Yeah. Pretty simple. But, and I think, also within that, I will say that hopefully within the next month, I'll be releasing my first short story for public viewing. As soon as I get all the copyright business worked out with that, I'll be releasing that to the public. So I'm excited about that. And so I can also say with that, that I'm planning on releasing at least a Kindle short of a couple of short stories that I've done probably by New Year's. That's my goal right now. So hopefully... just writing a lot, really excited about that. And I think, just one last thing that I wanted to say about, I feel like as we sit here and talked about this, I'm like, I think what my problem with like these great, like adventure movies and these big blockbuster movies is like, I've just gotten really I think I'm more cultured than I actually am. And I think I look at it as like, though I'm more refined than I actually am. And then I'm too good for some of these, like just basic, and just here it is movies. And I think that that makes me feel like a really big prick. So I apologize. I think for that, I'm glad that we got to talk about this, because I think it's been interesting to think about, just like, oh, like that's why I didn't really like Wolverine.
To be fair, I found myself realizing that I was doing the same thing and going, wait a minute, that was actually a really cool movie. And a lot of times I found myself, you know, obviously with other people being very cynical, going, why, this is a cool movie.
Yeah, because I remember walking out of Wolverine, you were loving it, I was hating it.
Yeah,
we were like,
and I was loving this.
Yeah, because the whole time Mikey's sitting between the two of us, and he's like, he's hearing it from both of us, basically, like his that was awesome. Mine, like, that was some crap.
I was getting the movie behind the movie.
Yeah, and so I think with me, I've realized like, oh, like the reason I can't really enjoy these movies is because I think I'm like really refined, and I have like really refined tastes. When really. And truly, I don't. I still watch. Like, I'm watching Pretty Little Liars right now. Like, my taste is not refined at all. My taste has zero refinement.
Well, interesting what we find ourselves, you know, watching and picking on, and then watching something else. It's like, what? You know. Well, by the way, I did want to say the train sequence in Wolverine is phenomenal. That's one of the best things I've seen on the screen. That was cool. Go ahead.
Tricky.
It was meh. Yeah. Right?
But one more way to find out if you like football. The NFL season is about to start, and Mike and I have a podcast and blog, and I write a lot of stuff on the blog. Let Pylons be pylons.com. Go check it out.
All right. Well, and one of the ways that people can find out if you're really full of yourself is probably to follow your own Twitter.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, you should follow me. Mine is Griffin _ Kale at Griffin, Griffin _ Kale.
Mine is, I think I'm going to change it back to my regular name, but I got kind of funny. People don't know how to say my name correctly. So I'm at Mark Wingdinger.
Mark Wingdinger.
Wingdinger.
I actually like that a lot more.
Yeah.
So
I'm Mark Wingerter, but it's Wingdinger.
Well, I know in just trying to tell people how to get in contact with them, we also went on tangents, which is what I love about this group.
Yes.
So you can find I'll have all the ways to talk to them or contact them, find them, see the projects they're working on, including things that they probably didn't even have a chance to mention in the show notes. So make sure you check the show notes out. And we'll get that. So if you want to interact with me or let me know of movies you'd love to hear us discuss on the show, then feel free to follow me on Twitter. I am at Fizzification. You can also find us at our blog, realworldtheology.com. You can like us on Facebook and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you like the show, leave us a review so we can get more people in on the conversation. Again, I just want to thank my guests for being here and you, the listeners, for taking time to make us part of your week. So until next episode, keep watching, but remember, entertainment is not mindless.
Bye.
Duh, Bears.